do the math. You can find more Big Picture Science on iTunes and through the link on our website. And while you're online, why not go to Facebook and do an order of magnitude calculation of the number of Facebook fans we have, or you could just read the number there at the top of the page, and you can leave your comments as well.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio, because after all, radio stations have numbers associated with them, check out the listing on our website of stations that carry the program.
Mike Holloway inviting all of you loyal listeners to shake that thing with those rock and blues on the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show every Tuesday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Yeah!
Ow!
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Now, our guest today is retired Air Force Captain Robert Salas. Mr. Salas graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy and spent 7 years in active duty from 1964 to 71. He also held positions at Martin Marietta and Rockwell and spent 21 years at the FAA. In the Air Force, he was an air traffic controller and a missile launch officer, as well as an engineer on the Titan III missiles. While on duty at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls, Montana, he was party to a dramatic UFO incursion in March of 1967, where at least 16 of our nuclear missiles became non-operational at two different launch facilities. The guards could not identify these objects, even though they were only about 30 feet away. And of course, the military did everything in its power to keep the incident secret, but for the past several years, Mr. Salas and others involved in the incident have broken their silence to bring the truth to light. Mr. Salas is also the author of the book Fated Giant and Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon. So we're happy to have Robert Salas on the line with us today. Welcome to the show, Mr. Salas.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Hey.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on with us. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine.
That's great.
Just fine.
That's great. So tell our listeners, for those who don't know about it, tell them about the incident in March of 1967. Where were you? What happened?
In 1967, I was a lieutenant in the Air Force, stationed at Malmstrom Air Force Base, Montana. I was trained as a missile launch officer, and our duties were to go out to launch what we call launch control facilities, where we had control of 10, at that time, Minuteman 1 nuclear missiles, ICBMs, and we would be on duty for a 24-hour period. There were two of us in an underground capsule, about 60 feet underground. We had about six or so guards upstairs that would patrol the not only the immediate facility, the launch control facility, but the launch facilities where the missiles were actually located. They're about a mile or two away from the launch control facility.
Mm-hmm.
So on March 24th, 1967, we were on duty. I was the alert officer. My commander was taking a break, a nap break, a rest break. And then I get two calls from the topside guards. First call was just to notify us that they'd seen strange lights in the sky, making unusual maneuvers, something they'd never seen before, and going at high speeds, stopping on a dime, reversing course, making 90-degree turns. And they said, these are not aircraft that we know about, and they're just lights in the sky, but they're very unusual. So they thought they should report it. I thanked them for the report, but did not think much more about it. And so hung up the call. About 5 minutes later, it called back, this time very agitated, very frightened, actually. Their voice, his voice sounded very frightened. He said he had all the guards out with their weapons drawn, and they were looking at what he described as a glowing red object hovering just above the front gate. It was about 40 feet long, oval-shaped, pulsating red-orange light, and just sitting there. He was wanted me to tell him what to do next. I told him, just make sure that it comes in inside the perimeter fence. I didn't know what to think, really. I was kind of shocked by the report, but it could have been that we were under some sort of an attack, and
Did the object ever come in the fence?
As far as I know, it just hovered there right above the front gate, which was,
okay,
like I said, maybe 30, 50 feet away from the guard shack,
right,
the main guard building.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, he had to go. One of his men was injured, but it wasn't. Later on, I found out it was due to the fact that he tried to climb the fence and cut his hand. He was so frightened. The next thing was he hung up, and I went to tell my commander about the reports. And as I was about to tell him, the missiles went offline. And we got a lot of bells and whistles going off. The status board that we had that showed the status of the missiles showed the missiles going in a no-go or unlaunchable mode. And so within the matter of seconds, we lost all 10 missiles.
Mm-hmm.
We also had security violation lights, which meant there was some indication there was an incursion into the launch facility areas where the missiles were actually located. So we had to send guards out there. I called back upstairs. They said the UFO had gone. I ordered them to go out to the launch facilities that had the security lights. And again, they saw UFOs over the launch facilities. So my commander reported to the command post back at Malmstrom, which is just outside of Great Falls about the incident, and he was told by the officer that the same thing had happened. And so he turned to me and said, same thing happened before. Well, same thing had happened. And I thought it was that night. As it turns out, a similar incident happened about 8 days earlier at another facility. But again, similar circumstances, UFOs seen over the launch facilities by maintenance crews and security guards. All 10 of their missiles were shut down within seconds. So within a matter of 8 days, we lost 20 nuclear missiles to UFOs. Now, when I say lost, I mean they were disabled. There was no damage. There was no damage done to the missiles. They were simply disabled, so they could not be utilized.
What does it take to disable one of those missiles? What would one have to do to disable it? In other words, clear the launch code. And are you saying that the launch code was wiped from the computer?
No. The way they were disabled was the guidance and control system was upset.
Okay.
We had inertial guidance system on the Minuteman 1 missiles, which means that they had to be oriented very carefully. It's a ball procedure so that the missile would know how to proceed on its launch path after launch. So what was done to disable that very delicate positioning of the guidance system was there was a signal sent. And the signal would have had to have been very specific signal sent to each missile separately. We have something called the logic coupler, which couples the, the orientation of the missile with the guidance system by an internal computer. You can put it that way, I guess. So that very specific signal was sent to all 10 missiles because we were getting the same readout. Well, we have a way of reading out the problem on the missile system, and we're reading out guidance and control system failure. Like I said, the missiles were not damaged per se. They were simply upset so that they couldn't be launched and expect to go on their correct trajectory on target. So, again, the same kind of failure mode was seen on the other site, Echo Flight. So I was at Oscar Flight. The previous incident was 8 days earlier, was at Echo Flight. The location of Echo is about 35, 40 miles away from Oscar, so.
You say it's got to target each individual missile launch control. In other words, one big electromagnetic pulse could not have done what was done. Is that what you say?
No, that's right. That's correct. And I think the Air Force at one point tried to sell that story that at least they tried to sell it to the Conant investigation that because of nuclear testing in Nevada, nuclear blasts give off what's called an electromagnetic pulse, that this thing could have happened. So that's baloney because, well, number one, we checked and there wasn't even a nuclear testing around this time period.
Well,
number two, that had been true, would have affected the entire wing of missiles. No, this was a very specific, and even the Air Force, in one of the documents that we received, stated that this was highly improbable because a specific signal would have been would have to have been sent to each logic control coupler separately in order to instigate this kind of shutdown.
Jeez. So, did you communicate with you were Oscar Flight, and the other was what?
Echo Flight.
Echo Flight. Did you communicate with headquarters at Echo Flight?
No, no. In other words,
did you get together and compare notes? You know what I'm saying?
No, none of that. What happened was we were told to stay in contact with the maintenance crews that would be going out there. Then we were relieved by another crew, helicoptered back to the base, and immediately directed to go to the squadron commander's office, where a member of Air Force Office's Special Investigation was waiting for us, in addition to our squadron commander. We were ordered to sign a non-disclosure statement, sign this statement where we would never talk about this incident to anyone. It was highly classified.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were never able to compare notes with anybody until 1994, long after I'd left the Air Force. I was able to go ahead and talk about it.
Why did you feel you were able to talk about it? Even though
you're saying... '94, I was in a bookstore in Seattle. I picked up a book called Above Top Secret by Timothy Good.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn to page 301 of that book, there's a small paragraph talking about missiles being shut down during a UFO event in 1967 at Malmstrom Air Force Base. I thought that was my incident.
Obviously.
I had forgotten about the fact that there had been another one, but so I went ahead and asked a member of a MUFON investigator actually to file a FOIA request, Freedom of Information request, of the Air Force, asking about this incident where missiles were shut down. I specifically told him not to mention anything about UFOs, just about this particular incident.
Hmm.
And lo and behold, the Air Force writes back and says, well, this is classified, but since it's been so long, we're going to declassify it, and we're going to start sending you documents. So that's what happened. They started sending me documents relative to the Echo Flight shutdown. And at that point, because so much time had passed, because all the launch control facilities looked the same. There's no distinguishing too much except where they're located. But I thought it was my incident. So I started talking about it. I started going public with the fact that these missile shutdowns were due to UFO sightings.
Mm-hmm.
Went on a program called Sightings and started talking on radio programs about it. Yeah. It wasn't later until 1996 when I finally contacted my commander in the capsule, Fred Miwalt, that I realized we were at Oscar Flight, not Echo Flight, and I realized that the Echo incident had occurred a week earlier.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So there was
technically I'm in violation of my oath that I signed.
Well, I won't tell anybody.
Oh, all right. Don't tell anybody. No, go ahead and tell everybody. I've been talking about this for 20 years.
Yeah. Has anyone? Go ahead.
Yeah, the Air Force has never come to me, and no government agency has ever come to me and said not to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think. The reason is they don't want to discuss this.
Yeah, well, this is, I've said this many times on this program, is that they tell you, you know, you're going to lose your pension if you talk about it. We're going to put you in jail if you let this secret out. But if you start talking about it, they can't do any of that because that's tantamount to saying, the guy's telling the truth, and it should have been a secret. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So they just they just ignore you.
Right.
Do you find that's the case in your case?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Every time I get an opportunity, I invite the Air Force to comment on my incident. I invite them to go ahead and prosecute me if they want to about violating my oath, because I'd like nothing more than to confront them in a court of law with the evidence that I have.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the same way with that Gary McKinnon in England. You're familiar with him?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And when they said, we're going to extradite him, we're going to bring him back here to the United States, and yada, yada. And I said, they're not going to bring him back. They're not going to extradite him because of the same reason. All of these truths are going to come out as to what he found out about the UFO phenomenon. Now, we have a treaty with England. They're our closest allies. Why wouldn't they extradite him? Well, there's the reason, because we didn't want to ask him questions. We didn't want him answering questions. Anyway, I got to take just one moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves here out of Henry Ford Community College in beautiful downtown Dearborn, Michigan. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Air Force Captain, retired, Mr. Robert Salas, about the 1967 Maelstrom Air Force Base, where many of our Minutemen missiles were rendered inoperable while a UFO parked itself outside the gate. And it's not the only, not Maelstrom and the other one we were talking about. Those two facilities are not the only nuclear facilities, missile bases, I should say, where that type of thing has happened, is it? Where else?
Absolutely not. We can start with Roswell, which was the nuclear bomber base in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only wing of bombers that carried nuclear weapons. They brought the first weapons to Hiroshima, Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, of course, we had at least two incidents at Minot Air Force Base, one in 66, one in 1968. Again, UFOs were seen overhead.
Mm-hmm.
The missile sites, they disrupted some of the sites, some of the communications, but the only other missile, the other missile shutdown incident happened. Mr. David Schindele just came forward during the citizens' hearing on disclosure, which happened last year, I guess, about this time.
Hmm.
And that was, I'm trying to think, God, it slips my mind right now. These incidents are in my book. There was another one at Ellsworth Air Force Base, South Dakota. The Rendlesham Forest case is also another one.
Hmm.
Because they had nuclear weapons on the base there. It's been verified. So there has been quite a few. If in my book, Unidentified, I've got a chart showing some of the many incidents involving UFOs and nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a book written by Robert Hastings, which I would recommend your listeners to, and that's called UFOs and Nukes.
Mm-hmm.
That describes other incidents involving nuclear weapons and UFOs.
Yes, Mr. Hastings was on the show a few months back.
Oh, okay.
So we discussed that, but I wanted to talk to the man that was there at Maelstrom. And Now, Montana is well inland. Now, this theory is okay. Maybe it was Russian, maybe, you know. And don't you think that a craft coming from some other country, no matter where, they would have been intercepted long before they reached Montana, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. We've got an early warning system, NORAD. We would have detected any incoming from foreign countries. Now, these objects were not aircraft. They were certainly not aircraft that we knew about. And therefore, they did, like what I described, was something that no kind of equipment that we had in the military could have accomplished. In other words, these were specific directed signals that were transmitted through 60 feet of earth and concrete and then penetrated triply shielded cables and sent individual signals to each of the missiles separately. We didn't have anything then or now that could do something like that.
No. And if the craft were from some other country, wouldn't that have been considered an act of war?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. These are our nuclear weapons. So, of course, it would have been an act of war.
And our government and military stated that UFOs are not a threat to national security. How would you answer that?
Well, of losing 20 missiles to unknown forces, and by the way, the Air Force never was able to come up with a definitive reason as to why these missiles were disabled. If that's not a national security issue, I don't know what is, because these were obvious. This was during the Cold War, during the Vietnam War. So we were at war, and we knew that we were in a Cold War with the Soviet Union, and we lost missiles under very grave circumstances. By the way, one of the documents we got was a telegram from the head of Strategic Air Command that said, we lost 10 missiles for unknown reasons. This is a grave concern, of grave concern to this command, and we've got to get to the bottom of it. We've got to find out why. So this was a very serious event. And the other thing that was going on at the time was the Condon investigation, which you're probably familiar with.
Oh, my, yes.
So that had started in 1966, August of 66, and then so March of 67 was right in the middle of that. Of course, the Air Force didn't want Condon to get wind of it and actually withheld information about the incident from the Condon investigators, and I've got proof of that. I've got documents now proving that that was the case, and which I've, again, put in my book, the latest book I've written.
Which is Unidentified?
Unidentified, yeah. It's in there. Or I go into some detail. By the way, your listeners could go to my website. It's www.spiralgalaxy.org. And if they link on the unidentified link to evidence, my evidence, they will see much of the documents and oral testimony from some of the witnesses on that website. They can read and listen for themselves the evidence that I have in support of what I just told you.
Yeah. Well, there seems to be a lot of documentation. I mean, I like to get cases on the show where it's well documented, and this is one of the well documented. This and Rendlesham Forest, I think, are the two of the most well documented cases out there. So.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. So a lot of that Or is all of that, I don't know how all of that documentation can be in one book or on one website, possibly on one website. You have a lot of it, though, eh?
Yeah, I don't have all of it, but a lot of it's on there. You'll find a lot of the documents in my first book, Faded Giant.
Mm-hmm.
But then we've got more testimony and like I said, audio recordings are on my website.
Audio recordings of the incident?
Audio recordings of myself and Walter Fiegel, who was the deputy commander at Echo Flight during the shutdown of his missiles.
Wow.
And that was the one that happened March 16th, 1967.
Okay.
And then I've got audio conversation between me and Fred Maiwald, who was the commander at Oscar Flight, where I was, March 24th, 1967. So I've got those audio recordings.
These are recordings that were taking place during the incidents?
No. These are recordings. They were done in 1996 after I contacted these gentlemen.
Oh.
To just to validate the facts, verify the facts, and they verify the facts as I've just outlined them to you.
Right.
So they're supporting witnesses to this case, yeah.
So how many other witnesses to this case and similar cases have come forward now?
Well, as to my case, I think at one point I counted 12 witnesses.
Hmm.
Now, some of those are deceased now. Like I said, I've been talking about this for 20 years.
And, mm-hmm.
You know, time has taken its toll
on
some of these people.
Yeah.
And then there are other witnesses I identify in my book of other cases. And again, there are too many to count there, but most of those, if not all, are still alive.
Right.
And these people were, you know, came forward. So I like to think I inspired a couple of them to come forward. They told me I did. As a result of my coming forward, they decided to also start talking about their incidents.
Right. That's good. That is great. I often say that, you know, the more witnesses come forward, the more witnesses will come forward, you know.
Exactly.
If they can tell their story, I can tell mine, right?
Right. And I think this will snowball eventually into a lot of pressure and let's get the mainstream media on our side and start putting pressure on the government to release the information that they have.
Do you think they ever will?
I think so. I really do. I honestly do. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of naysayers out there that they're saying now they'll never admit to it. But like I said, I think eventually there'll be the evidence will be overwhelming, and there will be a demand. Public will put a demand, a strong demand for a real investigation of this.
Right.
Rather than the phony investigation that was done by the continent.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. That was a joke.
Yes.
That was a sad joke, an expensive joke, too, at the time.
Right.
My theory is that the government, the military, the powers that be are allowing this information to come out, not stopping people like yourself from telling the truth, and just letting it let the public finally realize what's going on in spite of their denials, you know? Do you find that true?
Yeah, I agree. pardon me. I can't speak for what the government's plan is for disclosure, if they have any. I do believe that there is a secret organization within government that is holding these secrets. Of course, you may or may not know that we submitted a request of the Office of the President to release information about UFOs.
Oh, yes. I signed it.
Yeah, and the answer we got back, of course, was that there's no evidence to support the idea, et cetera, et cetera. But so I think it's very probable that at least the current president has no real knowledge of this, and it's being withheld from him, and that the information is being held by intelligence agencies and others. So it behooves the administration to try to get to the bottom of this. And like I said, I think eventually the pressure will be so strong, the evidence will be so strong, that they won't be able to avoid doing a serious investigation.
Right, right. Well, MUFON has come out with a TV show. Now I'm not going to be able to tell you the name of it. Do you know the name of it?
No, I don't.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, they just came out with it. Their first episode was on presidents and UFOs. And they were saying, you know, which ones knew about it, which ones didn't. Truman knew, Eisenhower knew because Truman knew, and certain ones. But then JFK, I guess, was going to release the, at least this is a rumor, that JFK was going to release what we knew on UFOs, and 10 days later he was assassinated. Connection? I don't know. You know, maybe not, but coincidental. And then, of course, Bill Clinton tried to get to the bottom of it, and he was stonewalled, as was Jimmy Carter. But Carter and Ronald Reagan had their own UFO sighting.
Right, right.
So
so all we can do is speculate at this point as to which presidents knew what they knew. So it's just hard to say for sure.
But I'm sure that well, the point was made that no matter what their good intentions are going into the presidency, once they're in there and they're briefed, they are convinced that this would not be a wise idea to let the public know. And I can see their point. You know, and maybe they know things that we don't, that, you know.
That would cause some panic or some distress among certain elements of the public. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
However, I think the overriding criteria ought to be that something this profound, that is, living entities, intelligent beings from other worlds are visiting our planet. And so it affects all of us. All of us. We ought to be involved in the final decision-making as to what to do about it.
Right. Yes, we should, but, you know, they treat us like children, and, you know, they know best. They know best. Now, go back to sleep. You know? There are no monsters under the bed. Go back to sleep. Anyway, so by shutting down our nuclear weapons, nuclear missiles, and other such things, do you think they're trying to send us a message?
Yes, I do. I think, like I said, they didn't damage my missiles. They just simply shut them down. It was more of a message that we ought to get rid of our nuclear weapons. And not only in my case, but the other cases that I identify in my book, some of them I quote in there are cases that happened over nuclear power facilities, for example, and other nuclear weapons bases. And all they did was fly over those bases, maybe shine a beam of light on a weapons storage area where nuclear weapons were kept, and flew off. again, they're just pointing to these weapons and essentially telling us we really should get rid of these weapons because they can basically annihilate us, obviously.
Obviously. And affect, yeah. Many things outside of our atmosphere.
Right. The nuclear blasts, like I said, send out electromagnetic waves outside the Earth's atmosphere, and who knows how much damage that does or destabilizing effect it has on, let's say, the magnetic fields of other bodies out in space. I don't think we have a good handle on that.
Do you think if nuclear weapons were ever sent, say, Russia sends one over to us, we send one over back in retaliation or vice versa, do you think someone somewhere would knock them out of the sky?
Well, I don't know. I'd rather not take that chance if we can avoid that. And one of the ways we can avoid it is by complete disarmament of nuclear weapons.
Right.
We had made a good start in that last START treaty that we signed with Russia. But now that we're having this crisis with the Russians again, who knows what the future holds for progress on disarming nuclear weapons worldwide.
Yeah, but I would venture to say no matter where this crisis goes, it won't involve nuclear weapons. And the reason I say that is I think both Russia and United States are both smart enough to know you can't win. No one can win.
Well, we thought Putin was smart enough not to attack Crimea also.
Good point.
And it's not just the Russians. You know, there are a total of 9 nations that have nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And a few of them have unstable governments, like Pakistan, for example, and North Korea.
North Korea, for sure.
So who knows what could happen? I mean, this is serious. I think it's a serious situation that there's too many nuclear weapons out there. There could be an accident, or they could be used in anger at some point.
By mistake.
A nuclear war.
Yeah.
Yes, or by mistake, right?
And when we're
there have been many accidents involving nuclear weapons. Mm. And of course, nuclear reactors, like the Fukushima disaster.
Right.
There have been many accidents like that, releasing deadly radioactivity into the atmosphere and the oceans.
Yeah.
This is serious business, and we really need to make it a priority to do something about it.
And when we're talking about North Korea, we're not talking unstable. We're talking wacky doodle.
A wacky doodle. There you go.
I have to take another break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with retired Air Force Captain Robert Salas about nuclear weapons and UFOs. And you... Mr. Salas, you have also claimed to have a personal experience or experiences with the abduction side of the UFO phenomenon. And what can you tell us about that?
Yes, I've recently gone public with that. I'd say within the last year or so I've spoken about it. And then I decided to go ahead and publish that in my book, Unidentified. There are still things I'm learning about that experience, but I can tell you certain things that I'm convinced are fact, and I'll give you a brief outline. In 1985, and this was before I went public on the on the Maelstrom incident. My wife and I were living in a beach community in California here. We had two small children. And one evening, we had a three-bedroom house. And one evening, I woke up to see a bluish light emanating from the living room of our house, and it seemed to be almost like a foggy type light. At any rate, it kind of frightened me. I thought somebody might be in the house. I woke my wife up. She also saw this blue light. And as I was going, I told her I was going to get up and go look. And as I started to get out of bed, I was paralyzed. Couldn't move. And I struggled. You know, again, I had two small kids in the house. And I was really concerned, but I was struggling really hard. And I actually turned my head and asked my wife for help because I was paralyzed. And she was unconscious. She had gone unconscious. Now, of course, a mother would not do that with two small kids in the house.
She was awake and talking to you an instant before, though. Is that what?
Yes, right, exactly. Okay. And then all of a sudden, she was unconscious.
Hmm.
The next thing I remember is seeing a hooded figure in our doorway of the bedroom. Again, I was still struggling to regain my movements. I can't remember seeing a face, only kind of a hood and a cape. Obviously, there was a figure there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing I remember is floating off the bed and also floating towards the window. And I, at this point, I got to say that I went through the window. I know how strange that sounds, but
not to me.
I remember locking the window, and it was never unlocked. So I don't know how else I could have got to the other side of that wall. The next thing I do remember is being on board a craft of some sort, or in a room with laying on a surface or a bed sort of thing, shown a long needle, and then the needle was inserted into my groin area. Very painful experience. I told them it was very painful, and immediately the pain dissipated. So they told me it wouldn't hurt, but it did. But as soon as I complained about it, the pain went away. Very strange experience. That's about all I think I can say for certain at this point, except that the next day, I didn't remember anything about it. We didn't discuss it. My wife and I did not discuss it. We didn't talk about it. I didn't remember anything about it. A week later, I had the feeling that I had flown in space for some reason. It was just kind of a feeling or a thought that came over me. It was a very strong feeling. But that was about it for quite a few years until about maybe, I'd say, 5 to 7 years ago. After having researched a lot of the abduction stories that I'd read about or heard about and talked to people at various conferences, that some of these memories started to come back. And so I have had a couple of hypnotherapy sessions where some of these details have come out. I've also had some dreams that I think are related, dreams such as seeing a large black eyeball kind of thing, and other dreams which I'd rather not discuss right now because I'm still trying to formulate whether these were dreams related to the subduction experience or not, and it's a process.
But the memory of the hooded character and floating through the closed window, is that a conscious memory, or did you acquire this through hypnosis?
A little of both, I guess. The figure in the doorway was the idea of regressive hypnosis is to try to recreate what actually happened.
Right.
So I'm convinced from both my own recall, actual recall of the incident, and from the hypnotherapy that I have, that what I just told you happened.
Right.
So I can't prove it, but the point for me is that I'm convinced that those things happen. Now, there are other things which may have happened. Again, they come from, let's say, strong dreams that bring back certain memories and certain things. And I put that in the, that could be a dream related to something else, or maybe this incident, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still dealing with that sort of thing, trying to figure out those other things that might have happened on board this craft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
hopefully in the future, I'm still in the process of nailing this down, and hopefully in the future I'll be able to talk a little bit more definitively about other things.
Okay, so you obviously have discussed this incident with your wife since then.
Yes.
Okay. What does she recall about that evening?
Well, she recalls the blue light, like I said. She recalls the blue light. Now, there are some differences because a woman would be more aware of exactly where the placement of the doors and windows of our bedroom was in that particular house. What we were doing in this is Manhattan Beach, California. We were buying homes, remodeling them, selling them, and then moving closer to the beach, buying another house a little closer to the beach. And so I'd remodel that, sell that, and then
flipping them.
Closer to the beach, yeah.
Flipping them.
Flipping them. And so, but I remember exactly the house. I remember exactly where we were. But she remembers the location of the doorway and the window at a different spot than I do. So we're thinking that this was not the only incident where we were taken, that there may have been others where we had a different structure to our bedroom, like I said.
Okay.
But she does not recall any other details at this point. She is not interested in pursuing finding out any more. And that's her choice. I don't think it's a matter of fear. It's just she prefers not to know.
I know.
Yeah.
I know where she's coming from.
Yeah.
I've talked about this on the show before. My sister and I were abducted. She saw me being abducted. Then she recalls under hypnosis that she was abducted. Okay?
Yeah.
And I don't recall. I remember seeing the craft. But that is it. And and then I have the missing time thing. So I don't. You know, people say, well, why don't you get hypnotized and find out? I don't want to. No, thank you. So I'm perfectly happy with knowing what I know and no more.
Exactly. So. And I'm kind of, well, I was that way for a while, but now that I'm more open about this abduction experience, I want to know more. So I'm making more of a concerted effort to, like I said, nail down more of the details.
Yeah, good. Good for you. That's...
You bet.
I think that is the course one should take, you know, especially if you have conscious memory of some of it, a lot of it, any of it, then you want to go in and find out the rest. I understand that, I'm sure.
Right.
So is there going to be... Go ahead.
It's a very complex subject, as you know, because there are many theories and speculation about exactly what they're up to and why people are being taken and what's going on with that. So I can tell you that I'll be speaking in Culver City, Los Angeles area this month along with Travis Walton, which I'm sure you're familiar with his case.
Okay, this is going to air the first Tuesday of April. Did we miss?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Did we miss you?
Well, then we've missed it then.
Yeah, we've missed it. So pretend this is April. So where were you, Mr. Salas?
Where was I?
Where were you in March? In other words, with Travis Walton.
I spoke at a conference with Travis Walton and a couple of abductees. On a panel, and we discussed our experiences, our mutual experiences. So
that's what
we did. Other than that, since I haven't done it yet, I can't.
Can you be more specific?
No.
I'm messing with you now. Oh, my goodness. So your books are Fated Giant and Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon. Do you plan on having a book on your abduction experiences?
I don't know if I will be writing a book on that, but I may go ahead as I get more involved with, like I said, investigating my own experience. I may write another book on abductions in general, UFO abductions in general, because I hope to formulate an overall concept of what the heck's going on and why it's happening and what we ought to do about it.
Well, that's another thing. I think that the reason that we're not, the authorities are not coming clean about the whole phenomenon is that people who know they've been abducted or suspect they've been abducted are going to say, you know, you have a constitutional obligation to protect us from this. Our Air Force, our military, our government can protect us. And what are you going to do? Our hands are tied. We can't stop them. You know?
Well, that's one of the reasons they don't want to come forward.
That's it.
Because they know that they can't stop them.
That's it.
And and that's another reason why there should be disclosure, because we, the public, ought to decide what we ought to do about this.
That's it.
And we ought to get together and compare notes and find out exactly what's going on and formulate a plan as to what to do about it, if anything.
If anything. If anything we can do, yeah. And where can people go again to check out your books and your website and what everything?
Well, at this point, they can go to Amazon.com and they can purchase either or both of my books on Amazon. And they can go to my website. That's www.spiralgalaxy.org. And they will be able to see some of the evidence that I have supporting my case.
Very good. And that includes the Maelstrom case and everything, right?
Yes, absolutely. It The Fated Giant book covers the Malsom case initially, and then the other book goes into more detail on the cover-up instituted by the Air Force and in collusion with the Condon investigation, how they covered that up. Goes into a lot more detail about that and other cases, cases that I've investigated I'm disclosing for the first time to the public. A lot of these cases, has not heard about yet.
Mr. Robert Salas, I want to thank you so much for joining us on We Are Not Alone. Hope we can get together and talk some more another time.
You bet. Okay. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show is, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.fm, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
That's right, you are listening to the only station making waves, WHFR.fm.
WHFR Dearborn. WHFR, the station making waves, proudly presents The Best of Broadway, a program featuring the best of American musical theater. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Joe, your host. We've taken care of your tickets. Now let me escort you through 2 hours of enjoyment of The Best of Broadway.